welcome you back. I'm now going to hand over to the chairperson from Multi-Party Women's Caucus to lead us in this session.
Thank you, chairperson. I would love that in this second session, we must arise and do a silent of moment with so many things which happened. I would not love that we will be mentioning each province. It's a national thing that has been happening to women, killed or raped. So let's take that opportunity and rise up and have a silence of moment.
Proportions. I think we've had many presentations emphasizing that today. As a group, however, LGBTI individuals are singled out for particular forms of abuse and violence. Provisional findings from research conducted by the South African Hate Crimes Working Group state that almost half of hate crimes that they included in their sample were motivated by prejudice based on the survivor's sexual orientation. Another study conducted in 2011 found that at least 500 lesbians are victims of rape motivated by homophobic hate each year. Lesbians, and particularly those who live in under-resourced communities, live in constant fear. A study conducted by Triangle Project found that 86% of black lesbians included in the survey reported that they fear being victims of sexual violence based on their sexual orientation. They could be attacked not just by strangers, but also by family members, friends, acquaintances, or neighbors. They are taunted and harassed and are unable to live a life of dignity and equality. Just to really illustrate this, one survivor of a hate crime who was interviewed by a study stated the following: "We get insults every day, beatings if we walk alone. You're constantly reminded that you deserve to be raped." What is significant about hate crimes is the broader impact that extends beyond the individual incident. It has a regulative function in that it impacts not only on the person directly affected, but conveys a powerful message of intolerance to all persons who share in the victim's identity or social grouping. This wider ripple effect has the consequence that hate crimes can and do intimidate and disrupt entire communities. LGBTI hate crimes are fueled by strong sanctions against women's transgression of their prescribed gender role, and therefore functions to discipline gender nonconformity and deviations from heterosexuality. In the recuperation of post-colonial African identities, the construction by national leaders of idealized black identities as exclusively heterosexual has exacerbated these dangers for black lesbians. Such a reassertion of a patriarchal traditionalism expects of women to submit to men and assume a passive role. Being lesbian is then often regarded as desiring to be like a man and therefore as threatening the traditional order of male dominance and female passivity. The extent to which this is regarded as a threat to male norms is apparent in the sexual-based hate crimes against lesbian women, which have been termed by some reports as corrective rape, where the rationale of the assault is that the perpetrator is using rape to cure the victim of their same-sex orientation. While I'm not going to discuss why the term corrective rape can be considered in itself as problematic, I think it just gives a sense of the misogyny that really underlies those acts. Victims often report that during the attack, their perpetrators tell them that they are being taught a lesson and being shown how to be real women. To illustrate, a male interviewee in one study stated, if there's someone who's trying to rape a lesbian, I can appreciate their thing. It's just to let them know that they must be straight. For me, I have no time to rape them, but if another guy wants to teach them the way, they must rape them. And as I've said, this really demonstrates the roots of this as misogynist hate crime that ultimately affects all women. Since 2002 in particular, there's been a spate of hate crimes. South Africa has seen an increase in the reported rape and murder crimes where sexual orientation or gender nonconformity was described as relevant to the attack. While our progressive legal and policy framework should provide some protection or recourse, many survivors instead describe an apathetic and inefficient response when attempting to access services. Survivors and their families often report secondary victimization by the police. We've had someone discuss that earlier today as well, where they are subjected to verbal abuse and demeaning treatment. Some women even report being asked mocking questions about lesbian sexual acts when they are at the police to report a crime. A study by the Human Rights Watch in 2011 also describes cases of direct victimization by the police, where the police are themselves the primary perpetrators of violence against lesbian women and other gender non-conforming people. And this, of course, contributes to severe underreporting of hate crimes and other forms of victimization. Just to illustrate this, a survey of survivors of homophobic hate crimes in the Western Cape found that 66% of the women interviewed did not report the attack because they thought they would not be taken seriously. Of these, 25% said they feared exposing their sexual orientation to the police, and 22% said they were afraid of being abused. Secondary victimization also carries through to other aspects of the system. There's a high rate of attrition of these cases if they in fact do proceed through the criminal justice system. Again, to illustrate, if we had to take a 10-year period from 1998 to 2009, there's a number of 31 recorded murders of lesbian women and only one conviction in that period. Further to this, there was a subsequent conviction outside of that time frame where it was the first time where sexual orientation was recognized in the judgment as motivating the murder of the victim. It was in Zaliswa Nkunyana's case. Her murder trial took almost 6 years with over 40 postponements, so justice is definitely not swift when these cases do proceed. This brings me to a final factor impeding the success of hate crime prosecutions: the fact that there is currently no legal provision in South Africa acknowledging the influence of perceived gender identity or sexual orientation in motivating hate crimes. We need specialized hate crime legislation. This has been proposed, and we really need the promulgation of that hate crime legislation in order to go forward in addressing it in South Africa. All these failures currently in our criminal justice system have created a context where there's a perception that hate crimes against lesbian women can be committed with impunity. And this perception is strengthened when public figures make homophobic statements or when they fail to condemn homophobic violence. To conclude, I'd like to summarize just a few key aspects which I think we can consider in addressing LGBTI hate crimes. There are some important gaps that we need to address. We need more research to really know the scope of the problem. The fact that we do not have specialized hate crime legislation means that homophobic motivations for a crime is never recorded. So if a woman is raped or murdered because she's lesbian, that is not noted unless we have this legislation. So we are currently only aware really of the tip of the iceberg because there's no systematic data collection and monitoring of this problem. A second point, we need a parliamentary review of the National Task Team on LGBTI-related hate crimes. This task team was instituted in 2011 by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. We need to review, we need an assessment and look at effective participation, campaigns that the task team engaged in, any results that they have, and we need to have human and financial resources to enhance the work of this task team, as well as the political will to support the advancement of their goals. We also need research that looks at how documents such as the Traditional Courts Bill and proposed policy documents such as the Green Paper on Families depict a specific view of men, women, families, a normative view, and how those implicit assumptions might feed homophobic discourses that contribute to a context in which a lesbian woman can be raped or murdered because of her sexual orientation. And finally, we need to look at why, where we do have good policies and good pieces of legislation, why we still fail so many LGBTI people and lesbian women in particular. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. I was thinking that we'll be taking a chance that I've seen the officials that they were preparing that to the minister. She's about to get in, but she's not yet in. So I was thinking that let's take a chance that we must give her also the time to present. Now, this is the time for discussion. I've said we'll prioritize the departments which are here,
they've listened, even now in the triangle, we have heard what they're saying, those things. That's why we invited you, the departments that are involved on the legislations, to look at the gaps or to give and share with us the information. Some of us as multi-party women caucus, we don't sit in various committees. We'll be getting also the information in order that we must take it up. You don't sit in all committees in parliament. So the presence of themselves, we do appreciate. Now this is the time that I must give any department to say something, to contribute, to discuss, to tell us what are they doing in their own departments, or contribute being members of the society. That's the time for that. Any hands will take, but it's not only department, also the societies who are here, members of parliament from different parliaments. SALGA is here, so a chapter 9 institution, a human rights commission, that's our day, all of us. Thank you so much.
Sorry to take your time, Honourable Chairperson. By way of introduction, I'm Liesel van der Merwe, and I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Women, Children and People with Disabilities. Chairperson, I would like to firstly, on behalf of the Members of Parliament, maybe, or I would like to just thank all the NGOs for their presentations. I think without their valuable contribution, the current crisis of violence against women and children would be much larger. If we didn't have this valuable input and the sector playing such an important role. And I think, Honourable Chairperson, if we go to the responses from the departments, I would really like to know, first and foremost, I think we're facing two very big problems that came to the fore when the civil society made their presentations. And that's firstly, are we putting enough resources into this fight? Because if we are serious about the current crisis of violence against women and children, are we putting enough resources into this fight? And I don't think we are doing that. I think we've got the resources available at provincial and local government level, at national level, but we are not putting the resources into this fight. And if civil society is not getting international donor funding anymore, are we expecting this sector to play the critical role they are playing with no money and no support? And I think we need to have a look at that. What is the ideal funding model for this sector? How do we assist them to be able to play the critical role that they are playing? And I think also the issue that we need to talk to is whether we've got a responsive criminal justice system. Because I think the issue that is coming to the fore again is the second round of victimization. Once a person wants to get access to justice, they are either then again victimized at hospitals or in police stations and in hospitals. And again, if we are serious about this fight, we need to address this problem. And I would like to just get some answers and some inputs from the department if we move forward. Thank you very much.
I won't limit honourable members and honourable members of the society. This is your day today. And we have scheduled that we're supposed to have made commissions, but we didn't want to go that route. So say anything that you want to say. I won't limit you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. My name is Wallace Ngoqi. I'm a commissioner on the Commission for Gender Equality. Chairperson, let me perhaps start with the appeal that those presenters who presented but have not made their documents available, it would help a great deal to get that. Because like in my case, the Commission for Gender Equality has a plenary meeting that is coming up in 2 weeks' time. So it would help a great deal to have comprehensive documentation by way of feedback into the Commission. And also to say that the Commission for Gender Equality as a Chapter 9 institution principally is not an implementing agent or institution, but more has the role of monitoring the implementation of the laws and policies in the country. So it gives us good ammunition, even in that monitoring role, to know what is actually happening on the ground as we do that, fulfill that particular function. So it would help a great deal, for us to be reinforced in that particular role. And we certainly, will continue to monitor not only, government departments, but also, public sector institutions, as well as institutions in society that are supposed to implement the constitutional provisions of our constitution. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and colleagues. I'm Connie Ngumalo from Department of Social Development. I think listening to the discussions and the presentations made by the civil society organizations today, it is very clear that the issue of strong collaboration, integration is very key, and the issue of resources. However, before I touch on the issue of resources, allow me, Chair, to just indicate that the role of social development in fighting gender-based violence is that of prevention, also to ensure that the response mechanisms are in place and monitor the prevalence and incidence of gender-based violence and ensure support and reintegration of victims of gender-based violence. By victims, we include older persons, persons with disabilities, and children. Currently, in social development, we working with civil society organizations, we've got 111 shelters countrywide. However, I need to indicate that, as it was indicated by Rape Crisis, we don't have a legislation that governs the establishment of shelters. As a result, social development is having now a bill, very draft, that will be processed through for public comments after cabinet has process it. The key area here is because they are not accredited, they are not registered, so they are operating based on minimum norms and standards. And as we all know, minimum norms and standards are not enforceable. People might decide not to follow minimum norms and standards, so you can't take anyone to court, so anything can happen in those shelters. So this is one area that we have prioritized as social development. However, the other area is to say, are we having enough? We're also asking ourselves, what is enough? Because sometimes we need to also take a conscious decision and say, who should move out of the house when there's the abuse? Whether it's the perpetrator himself who should leave the family, the wife and the kids in the house, and he himself be taken out of that environment, rather than building more shelters and more shelters and removing and inconveniencing children who need to be going to school. I also take note of the one of the presenters indicated that in these shelters there are no programs for children. That is the truth. We need to ensure that we have recognized that weakness. We are now beginning to ensure that shelters that we are renovating now, they are more of family units so that they accommodate children and also make sure that there are programs for children. However, it may be difficult for those that are owned by civil society organizations, but we're negotiating with them to say, within your facilities, how possible it is to make sure that you accommodate programs for children. And that comes with resources that I will touch on later. In addition to the area of shelters, we also having Kuseleka one-stop centers. They operate more like Tutuzela care centers. Tutuzela care centers, as you may all know, started focusing only on sexual offenses. The one-stop centers, they focus on general abuse, including victims of gender-based violence, where you find all departments in one roof to be able to assist victims. We have a few of those. Currently, there are 7. In the MTF, we'll be rolling over 2 of them. In terms of funding initiatives for shelters, because that was the question that came out today, yes, I agree that as government we have not really done an analysis of what are we investing in the area of gender-based violence. If we really want to make an impact, you reap on what you sow. You need to invest so that at the end you benefit. So currently it's social development mostly that is funding civil society organizations. And social development gets money from National Treasury. Currently the funding is not even near being enough. I think the civil society organizations here can attest to that. However, as a department, we also trying some efforts because we realize that the baseline allocations that we've got are not enough. We had an EU partnership with United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, where 33 million was allocated for established organizations and mostly emerging organizations, because emerging organizations are at a disadvantage. When business plans are submitted, they are usually do not qualify because they don't meet a particular criteria. So we had a deliberate effort or a regime just to focus on emerging organizations. So we funded 44 of those organizations, and the well-established ones were 48. We didn't stop there. We went to Treasury to say, now that the funding of the EU is a once-off or is a 3-year project, how do we sustain? So Treasury has allocated some funds, but still is not enough. We made an application to the Criminal Assets Recovery Account so that we can add to funds that are available within our baseline. So that account is managed by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. They allocated an amount of 26 million, which we are currently identifying and funding civil society organizations in this area of work. But, Honorable Chair, we won't rest, because all we want to do is to make sure that government invests in the area of gender-based violence. We will always go back and knock in the Treasury's doors until they listen to our requests. Other initiatives that social development is doing in the area of prevention, we have a branded program that we called Everyday Heroes. It's a program that has got comics that communicate issues of gender-based violence. It targets various target groups: older persons, persons with disabilities, children, women, and the entire family. We also embarking on community dialogues and social mobilization campaigns, focusing on the 1003 wards. However, we acknowledge that violence happens everywhere. So it's just that we have prioritized those specific wards. However, our interventions are not limited. And Honorable Chair, I'm not coming here to indicate that all is gloomy and shiny. We have constraints in terms of human resource. Social worker is a scarce skill. It was declared as such. As a result, we do have a scholarship program trying to train more social workers to be on board. We also now took a conscious decision as a department to have paraprofessionals to really support the efforts of social workers, like the social auxiliary workers and community development practitioners and child and youth care workers that are going really to assist us in really fighting the campaign. We have acknowledged that substance abuse may not be the problem, but is a major contributor to this problem. As a result, we also have a very huge program of anti-substance abuse, including alcohol abuse, because in South Africa, alcohol is one drug that is regulated, but people think it's not a drug. So we have taken a deliberate effort through our minister to champion alcohol abuse in South Africa, including issues of age, issues of registration of taverns and location, and so on, and operating hours. Social development is also responsible for psychosocial services, for debriefing, and is also key in terms of making sure that victims are protected and supported. I think we're all aware that also social development provides social assistance in terms of social security benefits. I won't go into details in terms of economic support. However, we are also exploring safe houses, and because we believe that there are women who really want to move out of a relationship, but they don't afford to have their own bonds or to start afresh building a house. So we're communicating with Human Settlement to say, can't in a particular settlement, can they build not really low cost, but houses that are affordable so that they can be available for women, even safe houses. We are also recognizing the fact that we need to implement perpetrator program, because by supporting the victims only, it won't assist. You need to involve men and boys in the prevention of gender-based violence. So we do have a strategy for the engagement of men and boys in the prevention of gender-based violence. We're working with organizations like Yosoke Gender Justice and Brothers for Life. So we also participate in the Victims Awareness Week. We know that some victims don't really know their rights. So the victim charter begins to outline those rights that people need to know about. So we partner with Department of Justice and Constitutional Development in making people aware on the, about the charter itself. In conclusion, Honorable Chair, I need to indicate that social development is also charged with the responsibility of coordinating victim support services, where we have forums on a quarterly basis where civil society organizations sit together with criminal justice departments. We acknowledge that our criminal justice system really is not working for our victims. We did a victim satisfaction survey that was approved by Cabinet last year, which clearly indicates the gaps and the loopholes within the criminal justice system. So there are clear recommendations as to how do we move forward in terms of making sure that we respond properly in terms of court support program, ensuring that there's legal representation for victims, etc. For now, I'll stop there, Chairperson. Thank you.
You were number three, and I'm hoping that when we're listening in department, the follow-up questions will be needed, and that's what we want. So many of us, what you have just told us, we were not aware. So correctly, so follow-up questions will allow. Number four.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good day, Honorable Members and Members of Civil Society and everybody. Honorable Chair, my name is Kholi Sofihlani, who is the Chairperson of the Multi-Party Women's Caucus in the Eastern Cape. Let me say we are honored to be here, and because of the speed of violence, of the gender-based violence within our province, we saw it fit that we even in the nature of our province, because our province is flooded, and we could not, we had to drive past very long roads, bridges are closed, but we must find a way to come here because we saw it very important, this meeting of today. Let me say, Chair, in the province, I'm not making a presentation of the province, but I just want to relate to the presentation in reference to the province that we are working on. There is a lot of gender-based violence. Yesterday, we were coming from a funeral in Elliotdale, where there is an old woman of 74 years. Yeah, 74 years, who was brutally killed and raped with her 4-year-old grandchild. And recently, the other day, we were in Durban, where there was a woman of 44 years old who was brutally killed. We don't know, because the police were still going to investigate, but what, because we're asking, was she raped? Then the police said, no, they don't know yet. And they killed and put in a toilet pit. But there is not even a spot of blood outside, even in the surrounding areas. The children, 4 months, and the other one was 5 years. Killed, put in different blankets to the pit toilets of other houses, not in the house they are staying in. I'm saying there is a real challenge where we need everybody. I like this issue of the collaborative approach, so that every one of us has a role to play in the society. But the most important thing, I think, is the issue of the family values, you know, because we must locate whatever intervention that we have on the preventative measures, not always coming to all these places crying, rubbing our eyes, you know. We must focus especially on the preventative approach that I think I would ask all the members here, so that we must do more work on the advocacy of it, everybody being involved. We must also welcome the issue of from the Department of Women and Children, the Gender-Based Violence Council, that has been proposed by the minister, because we think it will be able to escalate the issues from the various areas. Because, a case in point, even in Flagstaff, a woman was shot because of witchcraft. I'm just sampling some of the cases which are brutal, and even to ourselves, they are damaging even our health status. A woman was chopped because of witchcraft. At first, it was a hand. They chopped the hand. You must tell us, because they suspect her of killing. They chopped another. They put in the sack all the parts. That woman was in Honorable Nongonyana's area, because I know there's honorable member who's coming from that area. So I'm saying we are really fed up with this. So that's why we would like everybody who can do anything. The laws are there. The laws are there. Everybody is not. So I'm saying the men, especially it's the men that do these things. Most of these things are done by men to women and children. But those real men, there are real men, there are men out there who do not deserve to be called men, who are sick within our society. So those must be singled out, not necessarily ravishing the whole world, the whole contingency of men. So I'm saying we really need a really collaborative approach here. In the Eastern Cape, we have not necessarily said like this. I'm sure maybe this, after this, we'll be able to call even other members of the society, because there are members that are working with NGOs, your Masimanyane, your Women Against Women Abuse, that we normally work with. There are so many NGOs. But I'm saying everybody, even however small that person is doing, but it will be able to make a difference within the community. But the most special area that I'm saying, we must also focus on the family values, how we raise our children, how we relate and everything, because even the presenters here, they were also touching on those issues. Let's share for now, because there are other issues. I don't want to drag this meeting, but I'll come back if you allow me on the next round trip.
Thank you. I'm sure we're going to give number 5, and after number 5, we'll just pause on discussions and clarification. We've missed out, if you look at your agendas, the responsibility of protecting women. This presentation is going to be done by human rights. Thank you, number 5.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to first appreciate.
Yeah.
way to Gaiba and your right of sin. My name is Mama Wetu Gaiba. I'm from the Eastern Cape Legislature. I'm part of the Women's Caucus there, and Chairperson is Honorable Sihlalo. Chairperson, first of all, I would love to echo the words from my from the speakers before me to applaud the presenters for their good presentation. And secondly, Chair, I would love to put emphasis on the fact that we are not good enough in terms of supporting the common will. I'm saying that, Chairperson, without condemning the strides that we have already made, but I want to encourage us to ask questions, you know, and do everything in ensuring that we support the common will. You know, I want to believe, you know all the Tolini incident. You know what is happening in the Ngqamakwe area when a 76-year-old woman, I think it was the first victim, was raped and strangled to death. There were an old woman in Kendane, 110-year-old woman. That woman has been raped by a grandson. I would say a grandson, not necessarily coming from the homestead, but because a 110-year-old, old youth that is within that village are the grandsons. And I want Chairperson to know that that grandson was taken by the police on the same day he was released. When I visited the justice offices there, I was told that there are no witnesses. My question was, how do you expect to get a witness when somebody gets inside of a house at night and raped a 110-year-old? What type of a witness do you want until that young boy is out running around these localities as a hero? I would love that. We need to work very hard. We need to support our women very hard. That's why I take this moment, this period for me as a privilege to me to be part. You mean to me that you know there's a saying that for justice to be done, there should be a meeting of the minds. Our minds are here and we're meeting for us to come up with something to ensure that justice is done. There's no way that we can experience elder women with their grandchildren dying like flies. Yet we sit here, we come out with no program, with no way forward in ensuring that we are making a mark. Lastly, Chairperson, one area that we should also look on it is the area of initiation of our sons. I think last year, Chairperson, we agree with me, plus minus 49, because in the Eastern Cape, sons died during the initiation school. And what is bitter about all, with the understanding that the whole INSCA program has a cultural bearing. But what is bitter, when that son dies, that common woman has to go moving from offices to offices looking for death certificate, looking for what? Yet there is a saying that we are not supposed to take a prominent role or an active role during the process of circumcision. But when the son dies, that old woman has to go alone, moving from office to office. That is why, Chairperson, that we need to ask awkward questions.
For me, we need to rise up with a program that when my son is sick in the mountain, I must be given a way to meet my son. Whether it is under the trees or near the river, but I must have the time to meet my son. Nobody can raise those questions unless us to discuss those matters so that these common women can see that we are standing and supporting them, I tell you.
Honorable members, I've seen that our contributions are very valuable. I would love that we must have a proposal on our contributions. As I'm sitting here, I know that all of us this day and this time can be emotional. We have experienced bad things. When you're talking about family values together with the initiations, some of us have experienced when your son is going to in the forest, he will go there not smoking, not drinking, but when he's coming from the forest, being a man, he's coming now drinking liquor, smoking ordinary cigarette. And you even asked whilst you're at home that Umputum is asking cigarette. He left you not doing that. We need to come together. I know that in some cultures, Mama, they don't want anything to do with us. But I know that with the elderly mothers, when my son passed on in the forest, those elderly mothers, they will be called not to tell the entire family, even the mother. So we need this time, we need proposal that we must be involved. How? So I'm saying that whilst we're putting these facts, we know what do we want. We must suggest in order that in our declaration of today, we must have concrete things. Thank you so much. I wanted to check whether the Human Rights Commission are present today. If it's not, I'll take the second round. But you must not forget that say something and then propose in order that at the end of the day we are saying that we've discussed, we've said, we've seen the gaps. Maybe they even wanted that we must take there are problems with the legislations of the increasing of the budgets and so forth. Even you, civil society, say something to these parliamentarians. What do you want us to take it up and contribute? Say your views, but suggestions, we want you to put them on the table. Okay, seeming Human Rights Commission, they are not here, ne? Yes. Let me, are you Human Rights Commission? Okay. Let me, for the sake of that other member, or who are all members, even if of the civil society, you must say something. Not only one in this side, and then I'll be saying one. Two, okay. One, that side, drop your hand in this side. It's number one, two, three, four, five, six. I've said six.
You, Chair. Just one, first, I'm Gloria from the South African Police Service. I'm at the GFP. I will briefly take you to on what the police is doing and also allude
from where we must not forget to introduce our good selves in order we must know.
Okay, Chair, I'm repeating myself. I'm Gloria Jensley from the South African Police Service, the gender focal person. And I want to appreciate the organization of this sitting, this roundtable, on this sketch that is really a global phenomenon, and also indicate and agree with my colleagues that really this needs a collaboration, because it's not affecting certain people, but it's a societal problem. And I would love to say gender-based violence cuts across all spheres, and we are challenged as the police because we are the members of society that are having stereotypes that were mentioned by civil societies, that we still have to look on those things. However, having painted that picture that SAFS is committed to ensure that South Africans are and feel safe, however, we are facing, as I said, societal challenges. The police cannot succeed to fight gender-based violence alone. The police support the fact that the President and Cabinet instructed that Department of Social Development lead INC, that is Interministerial Council, to address the root causes of the GBV, as this is a societal problem, as I said. Furthermore, Chairperson, SAP is an active participant to the National Council on Gender-Based Violence, which is chaired by Minister of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. SAP commands and also has come up with national instructions. You know, we are having legislation, but there are national instructions that informs our members what to do when such cases are reported. We're having National Instruction 7 of 1999 that tells the police, and I think as this house, we need to educate one another. We need to educate our communities that when you report, there are certain obligations that the police, they're supposed to adhere to when you report these cases, and you cannot take a no for an answer. To name the few, members must render such assistance to the complainant as may reasonably be required to find suitable shelter, to obtain medical treatment, to provide transport. As I'm saying, as SAPS, we are part of the Thuthuzela care centers, the one-stop centers, where we're supposed to be assisting victims of the GBV. The interdepartmental management team, which was established in South Africa, is an integrated response, which also shows how serious it is for us to participate in these strategies. And I want to say, Chair, its activities included of quality service include victim support, providing programs for people who are coming forward that will enable us to ensure that we collaborate our efforts. The National Crime Prevention Strategy gave birth to the Justice Crime Prevention Strategy to address anti-rape, participating in trainings of officers for family violence and child protection. We all know that our minister, Minister Mthethwa, has established or he approved the re-establishment of the units in 2010, and we are having 176 units all over the country. And also, I did send through my presentation that shows the successes that they have indicated how important it is to ensure that services are taken to the police stations near to people instead of being in certain environments and not be found in some other areas. So communication, education, and awareness programs are key, and these units are running those things. And I want to share with the House Chair that there are modules in the training institutions of the police that are educating our members to know that these, how do you police the gender-based violence. And it is important that they align themselves. And it is important that as communities, as a service, client, customers of the service, we demand these things. And it is important that we as subs, we even establish men's program within the police that educate, it's called Men for Change, because men supposed to be change agents. Because if we cannot stand up as men folks and allow only women to stand against gender-based violence, it doesn't communicate a consolidated message to the perpetrators. And I want to say we provide national support by facilitating workshops, lectures, and presentations at schools, at churches, and relevant forums. The presentation will have the steps, but I'm not going to go through that. As I said, annually there are in-service trainings that are taking place within the police, all provinces, members that are dealing with crimes. They are taken through to be informed and be educated on the Domestic Violence Act and also on the Sexual Offences Act. Capacity building workshops are currently being conducted as I'm speaking to train employees to deal with the victims of gender-based violence. Schools programs address learners on domestic violence, dangers of drug use, and give safety tips. We conduct community outreach programs to educate communities about their rights. And within the police, again, we are having women's networks that conduct operations, and we give pamphlets that are having educational information to educate our communities. As I said, it is important to deal with primary and secondary interventions. Societal problems, we cannot say we are dependent on the police because they are reacting when the occurrence has already taken place. So primarily, we need to educate our young people. And what I would say, I won't dwell much on the legislations because we do have legislations, they are in place, but this scourge is still continuing. What are we doing? And I would say, what are we collaborating with other departments? We are collaborating with Department of Justice on the Thuthuzela Care Centers, National Prosecuting Authority. We are collaborating with Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities on the 365 Days Campaign, on the 16 Days Campaign of No Violence Against Women and Children. We are also collaborating with Department of Social Development on the shelters and ensuring that the services to those victims is given and the police is reflected and participating. Correctional services on the rehabilitation and reintegration program, we collaborate with them. And basic education, as I said, we are having programs that are called safer schools, whereby the police go around to schools and give information to the learners. And also, our minister participate in the IMC, the Interministerial Council, and the National GBV. What I would say we need to do, Chair, it's important that we provide, because what I've noticed and what we've noticed, the perpetrators are within a certain age group. What are we doing? What are we doing to educate that age group? How can we collaborate and see to it that age, for an example, 19 to middle age, what are we saying to them? What are the issues? What are the reasons of them engaging in rape? Why are they strangling young girls? If we can be able to profile and also ensure that we are not just fighting, but we know our target. We are focused. Whom are we targeting in ensuring that we are fighting this scourge? We are having the reporting mechanisms that you know, that annually South African Police Service is giving reports on statistics, and I'm not going to dwell much on that, it is not my platform to give you statistics, but the financial year 2011-2012, we can access the statistics on our website. And the challenges that I would put in this house is that we are having societal norms and stereotypes that influence the thinking and behavior of community members, and pockets of those are seen to our police members because they are part of the society. Historical background of gender-based violence seen as a private matter still poses a problem because it is not treated as something that violates the human rights. It's seen as something that's supposed to be addressed in families. Have you told your family before you come here? Those are the things that we are challenged. And also, family members interfering and saying and influencing the withdrawal of the cases. We cannot run away from that. That the very family members, they influence the very same. For example, mother will say, this person is our breadwinner, and if now he is being arrested, therefore we will not have food and all that. So how do we address those things? Chair, I would say, on our way forward, since there is a general consensus, even at this level, including the UN level, there is a need to be more, to have more emphasis on primary prevention, protection and prosecution of offenders. I know social development, that we are lacking social workers, but most social workers, of which I was once at some point one, we were dealing with paperwork of foster care grants and the like without educating communities to say, you are not supposed to act this way. We need to do these things. Community leaders need to educate people. We don't have community resource centers that are keeping our young people busy and ensuring that they are not involved in criminal activities. And we are having a challenge. As I said, there is a gap in our justice system because you apprehend a person and you cannot say now he or whether you, a police will go to court and oppose the bail, but the court will decide whether they give the bail or they don't give the bail. So there are those gaps that we have identified, and it is important that judiciary, political parties, trade unions, all government departments, cultural and traditional organizations should be involved in opposing gender-based violence. And keeping quiet of the society, especially our men, will not assist in eliminating the sketch. I thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I am Kunadi Mazime from the Limpopo province. Amongst other things, I serve on safety and security and liaison portfolio committee, as well as on the quality of life committee, amongst other things. Chairperson, I'm happy that I come after the colleague on SAF, because I would like to share with this house here that I think there is a big problem with our justice system, Chairperson. To my mind, as early as 1992, when we were at the ready to govern stage, and we were making submissions into the incoming government as to what we would like to see as women, Chairperson. From my province, we said we need more female police. We need more female magistrates. We need more female judges. We said as early as then, that is the proportion of the service providers in the justice system must reflect
of women in society in 2013. It hasn't yet happened, Jefferson. What's happening to the institutional memory of the justice system in this country? Jefferson, I think that's where we really have to pay attention. To my ear this morning, I think our departments seem to be answering a question we are not asking. They're answering a question we are not asking. We are not saying you are doing nothing. We are not saying that. We know you are working very hard every day. But the question which I thought when I go back home, I'll be having, I'll be armed with an answer, is why is the situation getting worse? That's the question. I hope I'll get an answer from this. Chair, you said we must make proposals. One of the proposals I would like to make, Chairperson, you know, colleagues have covered me, they've touched on their family values, and they also touched on family, the green paper on family. I would like to add on to this and say, you know, it's like it's like we're moving against the natural tide of things. You see, if we say let's push the sun today, the sun must never rise from the east. Let's push it that it rises. I think we can spend millions and millions, the sun will continue to rise from the east. Because that's the natural way of it to rise. Now, in my view, Chairperson, the natural sanctuary of women and children is the family. That's where everybody must feel the safest. And there is light at the end of the channel, Chairperson, the fact that there is a green paper on family, I think maybe that is the way to go. Therefore, let us reinforce the program on moral regeneration. Moral regeneration, I'm not saying that is going to be the panacea to everything, but it will go a long way in regenerating the values my colleague has alluded to in that slide. The other day I watched on TV, there was this discussion, is it Nolene or somebody? Whose values, whose morals, and those kinds of things. But we believe that as the evolving South African society, these values which we have in common, nobody wants to be killed, nobody wants his or her property to be stolen, nobody wants his or her house to be broken to, already we have a basis. We have a basis for the common values. Chairperson, I would appeal to those who have the capacity. Looks like we are shooting in the dark, all of us. As a country, we need a very strong research operation to clearly identify the ills that we have in society. So, our solutions will never make the impact we want, Chairperson, unless they are research directed. So that's the other recommendation. Let our solutions be based on research. Lastly, Chairperson, lastly, the question of language. These documents and the speeches and the green papers and the white papers intended to assist the people affected the most are written in English. Why don't we use the local languages understood by the very people we speak to assist? So the issue of language, that would be one of the recommendations. Thank you very much.
Okay, they are saying to me how it's going out. It's not coming to this round table. I was scared.
being an activist and a former trade unionist, I know when these songs are like this, we can see people getting in, they are passing on.
Chairperson, I was on the question of language. That we, it would go, you know, our programs would go a long, long way if we were able to communicate with the very people we seek to assist. But we go to these meetings, documents are in English, and they wonder, some people in my area, they would applaud very, very much and say, I would be really one. But as to actually what the message is, then these people do not know. We appreciate, last teacher, I appreciate the fact that the justice system acknowledges that there are gaps. There are gaps, but we are saying, Chairperson, I've alluded to the period of ready to govern many years ago. And we made our submissions as women from where I come from. We are not seeing the progress we are making. The weekend papers were telling about how the women judges, black ones, are being sidelined. But we made the call of LS 92 that we need more justice to, practitioners who are women, who will understand the concerns of women. Chairperson, thank you today. Maybe if I may share with you, you know this issue about the CB stores from our own province. There is a court case. Women are at court as we are talking here because CB stores abuses women. They've hid a woman, you know, so brutally, etc. And we would like the issue of CB stores. Pardon? Pardon? CB stores. CB is a type of a store like you say pep store, like you say jet store. So they beat up a woman because they allege this woman stole something. They beat and humiliated that woman, and someone was making pictures and the picture went viral. The picture went viral, and we are appealing that we escalate this to a national level, that all CB stores must not be supported really until their behavior changes. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Honadi. I'm suspecting your lunch is getting cold. If you pardon me, those who are left are still in number two, that we must grab our lunch, taking just 15 minutes, but we must not forget that the family values are very important. When President one other time in this National Assembly addressing us as the House was saying that sometimes went to our beds not knowing where our children, not only girls, but even the boys, and even sometimes even your husband or your wife, when it was President addressing us saying that this problem, it needs family values. Some of us, when we grew, you cannot come in your house when after lights have been put in your house. It was candles then, and they will even chat you away. But today we all slept without knowing where our girls and boys. We let them go to the clubs. After those drugs and alcohol, they will be doing that. Family values are very important. Let's grab our lunch and we'll come back. 15 minutes only. Oh, my coach is saying 20. Okay.